We've become a society preoccupied with sex, and by extension, with being sexy. But what happens to a healthy childhood when third graders can buy thong underwear and buy pole dancing kits, and there are songs on popular radio and iPods about bouncing booties that become standard fare for everyone? I am Veronica Rickert with you today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Today, we'll talk with one of the authors of So Sexy So Soon about what's wrong with our sexed up society and what parents can do to help their children navigate the rocky road between childhood and the teen years. Do you think parents need to shield kids from a sexually charged society? And what have you done to help your kids function in a media-saturated environment? You can call us this morning with your experiences, your stories, and questions at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. Our guests this morning, co-authors of the book So Sexy, So Soon, we have Jean Kilburn, who is a lecturer, media critic, and author, and Diane Levin, a professor of education at Wheelock College in Boston. Thank you both for being with us this morning.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, your book looks at the over-sexualization of childhood. Diane, can you paint a picture for us of what you're seeing and how the culture around childhood has changed?
Sure, and I'll start really with young children, which is where a lot of my work has been done. And from very early ages now, even in the preschool years, children are seeing images of what girls are supposed to be that focus pretty much exclusively on being pretty, being sexy. Learning what they wear determines their value. I was talking to a mother just a couple of weeks ago who has a 3-year-old daughter who only wants to wear clothes with glitter at this point after an aunt gave her an outfit with glittery things on it. And so the mother's really concerned that already at age 3 her daughter is so concerned about clothes and how she looks. So it starts then. Children spend more and more time glued to the screen, seeing images. Especially with young children marketed to them to get them interested in appearance. And it's affecting girls, it's affecting boys. And as children get older, we often hear then of the problems that we're having around sexual issues as they get to be in the middle school and high school years. But we're seeing it start at much younger ages.
Jean Kilburn, can you flesh that out a little bit? Tell us about examples in the culture that are cropping up.
One of the things we certainly found, as Diane said, is that parents are really struggling to know what to do about this. You know, everywhere we go, we hear stories about not being able to find suitable clothing or Halloween costumes that are completely outrageous. You know, Halloween costumes for 4-year-olds they can be pimps and hookers, or you can go into a major department store and get padded bras and thong panties for your 4-year-old. So we hear stories like this everywhere we go, and we also feel that there's a sense of being overwhelmed and a kind of sense of powerlessness about it. So we wrote So Sexy So Soon, both to help people become aware of the situation, but also primarily to offer solutions.
Well, I was aware of the phenomenon that you're talking about. There have been some other books about it, but I still have to say, even being aware, reading the first chapters of your book was really kind of hard, and you actually apologized to the reader for writing some kind of upsetting stuff there, and you tell stories about what parents are seeing with their children, and it kind of breaks your heart, doesn't it?
Right. I mean, it's when you start hearing the stories, you begin to realize something's going on that's different from what was in the past. We often hear, oh, you know, parents have always been upset. But when you hear the stories, you begin to realize that children are really confused. They don't understand what's going on. They end up acting out in ways that get them in trouble. And the stories we heard made it clear. And the reason we talked about that we apologize for being depressing at first is we feel it's really important, essential, if we're going to help children to first face head on what's happening to them and how they're being affected. It's very different from how adults look at the scene, even though we may be upset. Kids here don't think in the same way adults do. So we felt like we first needed to help parents understand what's going on, how is it affecting their children in the short term and in the more long term, because we feel like once they have that lens, then they're going to be equipped to figure out what to do, because we can't.
And as Diane said, it's really changed dramatically from earlier days. And
well, tell us one or two of those stories from your book.
One or two of the stories
in the chapter where you talk about what parents are going through.
Well, with very young children, which is more where I focus as opposed to Jean, there's an example of a little boy in kindergarten who says to a girl in the class, "I want to have sex with you." And the girl goes home and tells her parents, who go to school hysterical. The school is ready to expel the boy, but they have him see the counselor first before they do it. And they say, "What did you want to do to her?" And he bursts into tears, saying, "I liked her. I wanted to give her a kiss." And the adults had reacted in a way that totally misunderstood what was going on for him. For him, a kind of life-changing trauma almost happened. And the fact that the girl saw it as something that was potentially problematic, none of those things would have happened 10 years ago. So that's one story to help understand how it's affecting boys as well as girls and at very young ages. Another is a 7-year-old girl who started crying in the bathtub because she's not skinny like the popular girl that all the boys like in her class. Now, for 7-year-old girls to be thinking that way says something. The mother was very concerned about what was going on with her body and potential, and we certainly are worried the messages girls are getting about how they need to think about their bodies, but it was also thinking about boys liking her and who's popular and all of this stuff that used to happen when children were much older happening now. So those were two of the stories that I think capture a lot of the concern. A 9-year-old going to a kind of little dance at school who ends up sneaking to a friend's house to borrow a friend's dress when her mother wouldn't buy her the sexy dress she wanted. And so that's an example of how parents who even try to do their job have a very hard time doing so as they're undermined at every turn by what's going on around them.
And Diane, in that story of the 7-year-old who was crying in the bathtub because she wasn't skinny enough, she also said she wanted to be sexy and she wasn't sexy.
Right, okay.
And this is a 7-year-old.
Exactly. And what does that mean? Or, you know, an 8-year-old who comes home from school is saying, "Is being sexy sex?" And the parent said, "Well, what do you mean?" And he said, "Well, the boys call, you know," so it starts talking about how the boys talk about one of the girls in the class. They had talked to him about when he had asked questions about sex in the past, and he was struggling now to put it in context when the boys in his class were using the word sexy. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're just, in most cases, just about every parent we talked to had a story to share with us in some way that showed the struggles they were having, the struggles their children were having, where you could think about what might the long-term implications be, which, you know, I know we're going to talk about more, for children's development, behavior, and relationships.
And what happens as they enter their teenage years, their tweens and teens, and then the stories become even more graphic and in many ways, you know, more shocking.
Well, Jean Kilburn, where are these problems coming from? Is it the marketing machine, marketing products to kids?
Certainly, that's a huge part of it, and Diane can probably even talk more about this, but a lot of it comes from the deregulation that occurred in the early 1980s that enabled marketers for the first time ever to pitch products in the shows, to have the shows and the products and the commercials all be the same, so that we, for the first time ever, got characters in children's television that were also selling them stuff, and then huge franchises and spin-offs and everything else, which turned children into a huge market for marketers and advertisers, a very lucrative, very important market. And for this reason, obviously, that marketers are using every trick of the trade to target them and to get them really hooked on stuff very early on.
And what that means is that for girls, image, sex and clothing are used as the, you know, as the hook. And for boys, it's much more violence and being macho and tough. So violence was used to market to young boys, and appearance was used to market to young girls. And starting in the mid-80s, we had shows like Masters of the Universe for boys and My Little Ponies for girls. And the gender divisions have just gotten greater, and the extremes of what they're seeing have just continued to escalate.
And you can certainly see this when you just walk into a toy store, and there are the pink aisles for the girls, and then the black aisles for the boys, with all of the buffed up figures and the action games and that sort of thing. It's actually, in many ways, more rigidly stereotyped than ever before.
Oh, much more than ever before. I began getting involved in this topic during the women's movement, and at that point, when we started trying to expand horizons for what boys could do and what girls could do, things were much less gender divided than they are now.
Well, my mother likes to give my 3-year-old a Happy Meal now and then as a treat, and she says when you go through the line at McDonald's that they ask, is the toy for a boy or a girl, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And that's new. That it was not the case 10 years ago where they had a generic toy. And not long before that, they were not linked to a media or movie phenomenon, which almost all of them are now.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's both, not only is it gender divided, but it's also media linked, which lures children into, oh, this movie. Often it might be a PG-13 movie with toys for 3-year-olds. So that the ratings are completely disregarded. I mean, I could go through a list of problems with what's happening at McDonald's, so it's good your mother's noticing.
Well,
just to expand a tiny bit on the marketing issue, too. It's not just that the marketers are targeting the children. They're deliberately trying to link sex with shopping in their minds at a very early age.
Why is that? Is that because that's what children want, because that's what they see teens doing, or are the marketers creating this, out of thin air?
Well, they're not creating it out of thin air. We're all sexual beings from birth, and that's to be celebrated. But what they are doing is linking that sexuality with consuming and with shopping, and that's something that is created. That isn't something that we're born with. And that when that happens, especially when it happens very, very young, it's incredibly difficult to untangle that. And, in a way, it works well for marketers because it gets people thinking that it's what they buy that makes them sexy and it's what they buy that actually brings a kind of fulfillment that, in fact, the product never can.
But the other part of that, when children are young, like, preschoolers, they're trying to figure out what does it mean to be a boy, what does it mean to be a girl. And that's one of the developmental tasks of the early years. And they look around them to figure out how to do that, and they'll focus on the most extreme things that they see. So the marketers know that. So the more extreme, the muscles get bigger and bigger on action figures to capture boys' attention. And with girls, the clothes get sexier and sexier to capture girls' attention. So it is, in a sense, exploiting a developmental predisposition of children to look at extreme things and to gender divide.
Well, what can parents do? We're going to be going into a break, but I want to start touching on the solutions before we go there. Give us some ideas for parents.
Well, first of all, they can try to limit children's exposure to this stuff as long as possible and let it in slowly. It's like their fingers in a hole in the dike and they try to keep the water out, and they just let a little bit in at a time and deal with it. So one thing is to, pay attention to the rating systems and know about them so you think about which media you're letting your child see. Another is trying to set up rules about what you can watch, when you can watch, so it's not a constant struggle every day over, can I do this, can I do that, but it's worked out, and it's part of the family routine. Another is to have rituals, like we all watch this show together, and we talk about it afterwards, so that when children are young, media is contained in their lives and plays a small role. Controlling media is an important part. We also, hopefully, will have time to talk about some of the ways parents can set limits. But the first step is really limiting children's exposure.
And one thing, to, of course, an obvious thing is don't put a television set in your child's bedroom. In fact, about two-thirds of American kids do have TV sets in their bedrooms.
How many?
About two-thirds.
Two-thirds.
And so it's really important to not do that.
And we're talking
and
even
very
in the preschool
kids,
years, it's close to a quarter.
Tremendously. Of course, it becomes more difficult as kids become older, but it's not impossible.
So don't put a TV set in their bedroom is a good one to start with. But you're not advocating throwing out the TV, right?
Not at all. In fact, in general, we're not advocating a just-say-no approach to any of this stuff. We wrote So Sexy So Soon to open doors, not to close them. So we're trying to open lines of communication. And it just alienates children when we just rigidly say no and don't discuss all these things with them.
We're talking this hour with Diane Levin and Jean Kilbourn, our guests this morning and co-authors of the book So Sexy, So Soon. Jean Kilbourn is a lecturer, media critic, and author, and Diane Levin, a professor of education at Wheelock College in Boston. Well, have you noticed the phenomenon that our authors are talking about today, that childhood is being marketed as a sexual thing in terms of the products? And what are you doing in your family with the children in your life to help them navigate this new sophisticated world? The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send us your email at talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay tuned to Wisconsin Public Radio at 11 o'clock as Larry Mueller comes along with the Vicars of Vegetables and Time to Indulge Your Passion for Garden Fresh Veggies. That's coming up at 11 o'clock on Garden Talk on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert with you today here on the Ideas Network as we talk with Diane Levin and Jean Kilbourn, our guests this morning, and co-authors of the book So Sexy, So Soon, talking about the over-sexualization of childhood and what parents can do to help their kids make it through. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. And let's go to the phones right now. We've got Jake from Oshkosh on the line. Hi, Jake.
Hello, host and guest.
Hi.
This issue is obviously very concerning. I think that it's more of a societal issue as a whole, and that, you know, the objectification of sex is what's causing this, symptom that you guys are describing. You know, if you look at tribes across the world where, you know, women are bearing breasts and men are bearing penises, I don't believe that they look at each other in the same ways that someone from our societies would either look at each other or even them. And, you know, I think that it needs to get back to nature in order to solve itself, which, mm-hmm. of course, is mm-hmm. a very big problem.
The objectification issue could not be more important. What you raise is crucial. And our area where we're talking about children, I mean, children are taught to treat themselves as objects. How they look, what they buy determines their value. And boys look at girls that way. Girls look at themselves and each other that way. And one of the things that's doing, you're absolutely right, is making it harder and harder for children to grow up learning how to have caring, connected relationships where sex will be a part. And it really, in all the struggles that parents have with their children, it ends up also creating trouble with relationships and kids learning how to have relationships. And what became clear as we were doing the work for So Sexy, So Soon was one of the biggest issues is thinking about how to help children when they're young have caring, connected relationships and feel good about their bodies, because that's what they're going to need to be able to grow up in a healthy and have healthy adult relationships.
And the research is really clear that all of this stuff really does harm children. It affects their self-esteem, and it, as Diane just said, it affects their ability to have healthy relationships as they grow older.
Well, what about Jake's point that, you know, this is a deeper issue? Is this, in a sense, a losing battle? Because all of this is just trickling down from the adult culture, and if we're not fighting it there, what is the point? Because kids are going to grow up in this atmosphere anyway, eventually.
Well, there's a huge difference between growing up in it eventually and starting when they're three. So at least I think we can take this in sort of bite-sized pieces. It is a huge issue. There's no question about that. It can seem very overwhelming, and I know we often hear a kind of sense of powerlessness about it, but Diane and I really do believe that there are a lot of things that we can do to make a difference and to make a change, but of course it's not going to happen overnight.
And let's go to Karen now. We've got Karen on the line from Madison. Hi, Karen, you're up.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. You know, you've hit on a lot of points I was going to mention, but I guess in terms of a solution, it really shouldn't be a struggle. When you choose to be a parent, you're choosing to invest in your children, which means you have to submerge yourself in their world rather than dragging them through our adult world, which is what some people just don't have the energy to do. And what's been successful with us is that you instill a philosophy of modesty from the start. And I guess if that train's already left the station, it is more of a struggle. But we have a 10-year-old now who will never bare her belly, not even wear a suit, because she has learned that this is something of your own gift, and you don't give that gift away by revealing it or other misbehaviors. Just like you would shelter them from violence or some of the other adult ways of the world, you know, you need to do the same in terms of the sexuality. The F word in our house is not what you would typically think of as the F word. The F word in our house is fat. And when we had a rule that you can't talk about being fat in the house, that was very successful as well, because she, I guess we're lucky because she's very athletic. Mm-hmm. So she wants to wear, you know, the nylon sweats and the T-shirts and, you know, the Under Armour gear and things like that. So it's not, you know, she's kind of going down the non-sexy road, as you might say. Mm-hmm. But they've even, you know, we also use some of those words as we put them in the category of adult words, and we say that those are adult words. And certainly, don't let them watch commercials. You know, right. Public television was perfect for that when they were getting their early television hours, you know. Because once they understand that they're putting that product out there to get your money, and we taught them that very early, do you really need it? You know what? It's really not cool just because it's got Barbie's name on it, and that took a couple of years. So it's a very interesting, and as far as the parent-child relationship, I think that is just top of the list, especially daughters and fathers. I mean, that's been proven over and over that a daughter-father relationship will preclude promiscuity, you know, in the tween and teen years. I mean, that's the best medicine for that. So I guess to be proactive would be the biggest thing. And invest your time, invest your energy, and you're going to have to sacrifice as an adult. You know, we all know that as parents, that you're going to have to, you know, set your own desires, and, you know, when you want to watch that TV show and the kids are still around, you got to shut the TV off and go do a kid thing. You know, it's just a matter of starting it from the beginning, I guess.
Well, thanks a lot for your call, Karen. And Diane Levin, those sound like a lot of things that you talk about in your book. Just
yes,
Karen doing the right things.
And it sounds like one of the things that stands out most about what Karen talked about is the fact that each family needs to kind of work together to come up with their solutions. You can hear all the, you know, that what works for one family won't necessarily work the same way for another family because children are different. But another thing that stands out for me is society shouldn't be making it so hard for parents to do their job, and so there shouldn't be hurdles at every turn. We should be supporting parents in their job, and that's not happening now. Society is really making it hard. And yet, as Karen shows, there are many ways through having a strong relationship, and the other thing is taking a child's point of view, not looking at it all from one's own perspective, but what is going on for one's child, what works for one's child is really important. At the same time, we talked to many parents who were trying to work the way Karen was, who would come upon a hurdle that just threw them for a loop, where they thought things were going really well, but some crisis suddenly came along that they weren't prepared for and that they thought they could prevent. So I think we absolutely have to be connected with our kids and help them navigate the minefields. That's probably what we say in So Sexy, So Soon, is that's the single most important thing we think parents can do, is have this relationship so kids come to their parents to talk about the confusing things, so the kids don't think they're going to be shamed, don't think they're going to be punished, don't think their parents are going to be upset. And even when we don't know the right answer, which happens for many things that come up, we can say, well, let's talk about that more tomorrow, so you have a chance to think about it. Or we should also have give and take. Well, what do you know about that, and where did you hear it, and what do you think? It's not a matter of just pouring the right answers in. It's a matter of kids feeling like they can have these give-and-take conversations to figure things out with our help.
Can I just jump in for a second and to build on something else that Karen said, and one of the points that we make in the book, one of the suggestions is to really become familiar with the culture of our children, to, you know, watch the shows that they're interested in, listen to their music, and not to just certainly not to bash them for liking this stuff, but to really understand it and become knowledgeable about it so that we can have meaningful conversations about all this stuff with them. And this becomes particularly important as children get older, you know, so that they won't simply feel that we're alienated from their entire culture. And then that's another place where we can have all these conversations. And, of course, it's also very important, as Karen mentioned, too, that we should be pointing out these things with our children, having, if we're watching a commercial, and sort of say, well, what's that about? What does, you know, why are they dressed like that in this commercial? Just try and bring this all of this stuff into consciousness for our kids.
But I will say we know that even when we teach children about commercials, they still want what they see. They may be a little more resilient. But it's still, even adults do that. That's what all the research says, and marketers know it. If they thought just by saying that's an ad, you shouldn't want it, solve the problem, they wouldn't spend the billions of dollars they do marketing.
Well, and in terms of the opening the doors of dialogue like you were talking about, one of the things you point out is that you should ideally do this before the crisis happens. So you start early, so you can't build a bridge overnight, but if you've been working on it all along, then you've got that door right there to walk through.
Absolutely. Both of us couldn't feel more strongly about that. I mean, there's an example in the book of the child who has had several conversations with his parents where he's asking questions about things he's seen, about what it means, and he always has this kind of supportive kind of conversation, and then he'll walk away and come back 6 months later to continue it. And then he comes home one day when he's in, I think it's third grade, to say he saw something on the internet that he thinks would upset his, you know, that his parents would be upset about. And they say, what? And he talks about his friend showing him pornography. And the parents are upset, but their conversation with him really focuses more on, well, what did you do when you saw it? And what did you see? And to try to, as they're buying time to think about what they want to do, connect with him and let him know it's good that he raised the issue and they can talk to him without flipping out. Mm. Whereas the other boy's parents, when they found out about it, he lost his computer time for a month. And that's not how we're going to help children deal with it. That's an example of just saying no. And just saying no very much leads children to go underground to see things, but doesn't help them process it the way the boy I was describing ended up getting help from his parents.
Let's take another call now. Here we have Joe with us from Wausau. Hi, Joe. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'm just calling because, well, I agree with regulating marketing. I think the deregulation of marketing and allowing people to market to children is horrible. But Kathleen, you said something that really quite scares me, and that's battling sexuality in the adult world. I feel that adults should be free to be as sexual as they want, and really the responsibility here lies in the parents. And the parent who called in, I think, two calls ago, just hit it right on the button. It's all about the parents just immersing themselves in the child's world and regulating what the child sees and walking the child through the world. But we can't exactly shelter the child from the adult sexual world. What we have to do is we have to just explain to them and guide them through it as things happen, and allow the adult world to be the adult world, and allow the child world to be the child world, and try to keep the two separate.
If I can just say something quickly to that it's incredibly difficult these days to keep those worlds separate, particularly things like the Internet, where kids stumble upon pornography, you know, at very early ages. And although parents have a huge responsibility, and we did write So Sexy So Soon primarily for parents, as Diane said, the society should be making it easier for parents, not more difficult. And I feel, as a mother of a 21-year-old daughter, that I raised her in a culture that was hostile to everything I wanted for her, and that it's just asking too much of parents to be solely responsible for sheltering and protecting our children from all of these forces.
Diane Levin, do you want to jump in on that?
Well, I agree with everything Jean said, and especially, I mean, that young children, there are many countries that do, for instance, ban advertising to children. And if we were banning advertising, a lot of the practices that are using sex to market to children would not be going on. So that's certainly important. When we think about kind of the adult sexuality issue, I think, you know, rather than, you know, we're not saying regulate or not regulate, but what we are saying is right now that what's happening around the marketing using sex to market to adults is kids are constantly being exposed to it, and we need to think about what that means and how society wants to deal with it. And in addition, we need to think about, when we're thinking about children now, one of the things that worries Jean and me the most is that as children are growing up, what it means for their adult relationships is really, really worrying. So that adult sexuality being thought about in the absence of relationship, being objectified, the inability of adults to even have caring, connected relationships is so much of it's being undermined by what's going on now really worries us a lot.
There's the author of a book, Save the Males, that I came across recently, and she was talking about how college men are increasingly reporting sexual dysfunction that you usually only saw in, you know, 70-year-olds, 60-year-olds, mm-hmm. because her posit is that it's because of the over-sexualization of cultures and the fact, you know, that there is this sex culture that's really kind of over the top.
And the need
to
perform.
It's not just the sex culture, but it's also the mainstreaming of pornography, so that that kids these days are exposed to sort of huge doses of pornography that really unlike anything before. This is not, we're not talking about the Playboy centerfold, you know, it's a whole other world. And so boys, I think, if they're judging themselves by the sort of performance in porn, you know, that in itself could probably lead to sexual dysfunction. And of course, girls are measuring themselves against the porn stars and often trying to emulate some of their behavior with the pole dancing and the stripper outfits and that sort of thing. And boy, there couldn't be a worse model for sex as well as for relationships than pornography.
What about what Joe said about keeping the children's world the children's world and the grown-up world the grown-up world? Is that possible to do?
Having just been in New York City, I'm now in Boston, but having just been in New York and noticing what's happened in the to all the buildings with their electronic advertising and images that are on the walls of buildings everywhere, every other image I saw was a highly sexualized image just riding down the street in a taxi. We can't protect children from those images as things are now. So we need to figure out how to help kids grow up in this culture in a way that helps them develop the healthy things they need as best we can. I mean, we don't say So Sexy So Soon is going to solve all the problems. We say it's going to help parents do a lot better job than with everyone seeming to not be paying much attention to what's happening to children with this issue.
One thing, just to illustrate, when we talk about it's just not up to parents, but we could have a society that would make parents' jobs easier, is that we could and should be teaching accurate, honest, age-appropriate sex education in our schools. And not just education about the mechanics of sex, but education about relationships and about how to have authentic, intimate connections. And we are the only developed nation in the world that does not do this. And our kids pay an enormously high price for our failure to do this.
Do you think that this is a problem that other developed nations are seeing as well? Or is this something that's sort of unique to American culture?
I think we're at the forefront. I've been in several other countries and spoken about some of these issues. And it's certainly, they're a little behind us, but they're certainly struggling these issues. Most recently, I was in Belfast, Northern Ireland, working with early childhood teachers there who say they're really struggling with these issues as well. And when they describe the kind of play they're seeing and the kind of behavior they're seeing, there were many, I mean, it's more or less parallel. And when I talked to them, I said, well, you tell me what's the same and what's different. And they said, there's nothing different.
Mm. I would agree. I mean, my colleagues in Australia, for example, throughout the United Kingdom are having very much the same experiences. And as the world becomes smaller and becomes a global marketplace, you know, we see more and more of this kind of marketing, this kind of advertising, and then all of the resulting problems.
We're going to take a quick break right now, and then we'll go back and take more of your phone calls this morning. We do have a few open lines for you at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call, or send email at talk@wpr.org. Are you a parent who's noticed issues like this with your child, and how are you helping your child navigate the over-sexualized American culture that our guests are talking about this morning. They're the authors of So Sexy, So Soon, Diane Levin and Jean Kilburn. Jean Kilburn is a lecturer, media critic, and author, and Diane Levin, a professor of education at Wheelock College in Boston. I'm Veronica Rickert with you here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 12:30 today, it is Chapter a Day as Jim Fleming reads from The Appeal by John Grisham. Veronica Rickert keeping you company today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk with Diane Levin and Jean Kilburn, the authors of the book So Sexy, So Soon, about what's wrong with our sexed-up society and what parents can do to help their children navigate that rocky road between childhood and adulthood. And we've got Erin on the line right now from Madison. Hi, Erin. You're up.
Hi there.
Hi.
A couple quick things. Diane, I have a friend that just started or is just starting to teach this fall out at Wheelock in Boston, I think in your department. So her name's Lucy.
I know who your friend is. Wonderful.
Yeah. Awesome. I have three young girls, and my oldest is 4 and a half. So I can tell already that kind of thing is starting. When I take her picture, she'll give me a little pose now, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is starting already. But we listen to WPR all the time, and we're listening in the car, and she asked me, Mom, what does sexy mean? And so mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure how to answer her. So I was hoping that you guys could let her know, and I'll just hang up and take my
answer
off the air.
Is she listening right now?
Yeah, she's listening right now.
Oh, great. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Erin. Diane, do you want to take that?
Well, sexy, when we're thinking of for a three-year-old, and that certainly is one of the issues of talking about this book, thinking about what issues will it raise for children who are listening, and that's something that we think about a lot. But for a three-year-old, what I would say is it has to do with how you look, and some people think girls should look one way, and some people girls should look another way. And if I was there and I could talk to her, I'd say, what do you think about how girls should look? And I would use that as a way to then talk more based on what she said about what some people think is pretty and what other people think is pretty, and have a discussion starting like that and seeing where it goes, and say, so what if you hear something about it again, ask me. We can talk about it more. Parents don't need to have the right answers. We think it's much more important that they convey a sense of it's good that Erin's daughter asked this question of her mom so that they could start talking about it now, and over the years they'll talk about it more.
And Jean Kilburn, do you want to get in on that? Excuse me just a second here. Let me see if I can get rid of that phone ringing.
Someone else is calling in.
Yeah, someone is. Let's see here. Okay, I think that took care of it. No, it didn't. Well, let's stick with you, Diane, until we can get that line sorted out. And in the meantime here, we've got a call from Tim in Ladysmith. Hi, Tim, you're up.
Hi, thanks for having the show. Excellent show.
I am so sorry. I cannot figure out where the beeping is coming from here. Let me see. It is still there. Well, we will go ahead and, Diane, let me ask you a question, and
yeah,
we'll see if we can get rid of the beeping there.
And then we can talk to Tim.
Right, then we'll talk to Tim. One thing I wanted to ask you about is some of the counter ideas here from people who are saying, there were some magazine editors who were questioned about your book, and they said that the talking about these issues and placing an emphasis, especially for girls, on looking pretty, having fabulous skin isn't a bad thing because those girls will then go on to make positive choices. What do you think about that argument?
What kind of positive choices did they mean?
I think that they meant that they would have higher self-esteem and then would be less likely to get involved in maybe bad relationships or make bad choices academically, that kind of thing.
I mean, I just don't think if society was supporting girls' holistic, healthy development, we'd even be talking about this. I mean, the idea of, I mean, it does become an issue when everyone is judging girls by how they look, mm-hmm. that then we have to think more about how they look. But if we had a society that wasn't going more and more in that direction, where how you look determines your value and whether people are going to be interested in you and like you, then we wouldn't have to deal with it. And I think the longer we can delay girls focusing on appearance as being the primary focus, the better it is. There's plenty of time to start working on it when they start feeling it's important. On the other hand, we're not saying totally protect your child from the environment, you know, from what's going. I mean, when your child is exposed, that you need to then talk about it and deal with it. But I mean, you know, we get a call from a mother of a kindergartner whose daughter goes to a birthday party at a spa for little girls where the kids dress up and have fashion shows. And the store is saying this is good for little girls because they're learning how to start thinking about how they want to look when they grow up. And then the mother says that's all her daughter wants to play, is dressing up and being sexy because they're taught how to walk down a runway wiggling to have a fashion show at this spa, and that's what they end up doing. That doesn't help girls develop fully. That doesn't help them develop a full range of interests. Kids learn from their play, and when they're just imitating what they were told to do, that's very, very narrow, and that everyone at the spa goes, ooh, ah, isn't she pretty? Girls learn that's what they need to do to be successful. So I'm not sure what the editors are talking about.
Well, we figured out what the beeping was. We lost Jean Kilbourne, and that was her line. And
okay, I thought she was quiet.
Right, we're going to redial her right now.
Good.
But in the meantime, let's go back to the phone, and let's take this call from Jim in Abrahams. Hi, Jim. Thanks for calling.
It's not Abraham. It's Abrams.
Abrams. Thank you very much, Abrams.
All right. And I agree with that last point that your guest made. I think that... women, girls especially, mix sex up with love. I think for most men and boys, sex is lust. And for most girls and women, the emotional chip in them translates it into love. And I think that that's a major problem. I don't know how we'll ever solve that one. I also think that as far as parents working with their children, I think what I did with my kids, and I homeschool our kids, I was right up front with our both my daughter and my son by showing them some of the magazines that are out there and saying, this is...
Oh, I'm so sorry. I was locking in our guest, and now we lost Jim. Well, a bit of a Keystone Cops moment here, but I think we got the gist of his comment.
And I'm back, by
comment.
The way.
Yes.
Good. Hi,
good.
Jean.
There's one good silver lining there. Thank you, Jean. And Diane, do you want to take what Jim was talking about?
Okay, well, this
there?
Is really a Jean question since she deals with adolescents
but of course
and older
I missed
kids.
It.
But I'll try to paraphrase it enough
it.
So Jean can jump in, which was talking about the different ways men and women think about sex, that women think about it, associate sex with love, and men associate sex with lust, and how that's contributing to the problems that we're having.
I'm not sure there's any research that really backs that up, but certainly everybody believes that. There's certainly been some research lately that's indicated that, let's talk about teenage boys, that they want attachment, you know, every bit as much as girls do, that attachment and intimacy and connection are every bit as important for men and boys as for women and girls.
But one of the things that's happening is kids more and more are thinking initially of sex as being outside of a relationship, hooking up, and then suddenly they're saying, well, when I'm ready to have a real caring relationship and for something more permanent, then I'll be able to do it. But the fact is, it's a progression starting at a very young age, learning how to have relationships and the kinds of relationships girls and boys used to have in middle school and high school. Really helped pave the way for more long-term, intimate, connected relationships as they got older. And we think that there's real problems with that now, too.
There's no question about it. Diane said also we learn about relationships from birth, really, and first of all with the relationships with our caregivers. And so what prepares us for relationships, sex will be a part, is all kinds of relationships, learning how to be connected and to be intimate and to care about somebody else and to feel empathy, all of those things we learn ideally in early childhood.
Let's take another call now. Here we have Lewis in Osceola. Hi, Lewis. Thanks for calling.
Hi, it's Ruth in Osceola.
I have no idea how I got Lewis. I plead innocent.
Okay. Well, I was very upset by an earlier caller who said that adults have the right to be as sexual as they want to, and that it's the parents' problem to protect the kids.
Right.
It's really not. It's society's job to protect the kids. Adults can be as sexual as they want within the privacy of an adult environment. They do not have a right to bring their sexuality out into the public eye where parents can't protect their children from it. And that's where I think our society has gone so far wrong lately, is by bringing adult sexuality out into such a public arena that we can't keep our children away from it. And my only solution is, when you see a company marketing to children in a very sexual way, don't buy the product. I flatly refuse. I don't care if my kids are mad at me. I have four girls ranging from 22 to 7.
Mm-hmm.
And I flatly refuse to buy from companies that will market to children. That is my vote. That's my really the mm-hmm. only way that we can do anything about it is with our dollars.
Right. Mm-hmm. A couple of things. One is many parents are saying there are fewer and fewer companies to turn to at this point, that it's harder and harder to find things within the range of what they think is okay. But your first point, Ruth, where you're talking about putting the whole blame on parents, I think there's a big effort by industry to say it's parents' job to decide what's appropriate for their kids. We wouldn't do this if it wasn't appropriate. I mean, if parents didn't do it or didn't buy it or didn't let their kids be exposed. And then on the other hand, they do everything they can to make it impossible for parents to say no. And it just serves the interest of industry to kind of set up the parent blame game. And we need to work really... And so I do think we need to work together. One of the things we talk about in So Sexy So Soon is that schools are kind of giving up their role and responsibility in helping deal with this issue, helping parents, helping families, helping children. Jean mentioned already sex education issues, but the whole range of ways media culture is affecting kids' relationships, increased bullying. Often media is just not part of the picture. So we need to work to change the whole society as we're working to get schools involved, as we're helping parents deal with the problem. It's a society-wide issue, and all constituents who care about children need to get involved.
One thing I wanted to touch on, Diane, I'm not sure if it was you or Jean Kilbourn, but I read in researching this hour that one of you helped spearhead the movement that stopped development of dolls being made of the pussycat dolls,
yes.
Which is something I feel like,
I won't mention
out there
the
on
organization
the
because it has a website that will really help listeners who want to learn more and do more. It's called the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood, and the website is commercialfreechildhood.org. And what we did, we launched campaigns around some of the worst kinds of marketing that's happening to children around many issues. And when Hasbro was about to release a pussycat doll, we launched a campaign and of people writing letters and doing media. And after 2 days, Hasbro announced they were not releasing the dolls. We've had similar success with other kinds of products related to junk food marketing and marketing to babies, claiming to make them smart where there's no research. But the sexualization issue is certainly one we're very connected to.
And speaking of websites, we do have a website for So Sexy So Soon, www.sosexysosoon.com, which has an extensive resource list on it with all kinds of places where parents can go to get further information.
Okay, back to the phones. Sam with us now from Appleton. Hi, Sam, you're on the air.
Hi. I would like to discuss this from a kid's point of view.
Uh-huh.
From the kid's point of view, what happens during the media and how we're pressured and things.
Sure. How does that feel?
We're pressured more to be skinny than anything, and it's not really about sex, but it's more about how we're supposed to look and feel, and no matter how much parents try to, if we look different, no matter how much parents try to prepare us for that, it's still when we're isolated from the group, it still hurts, and really no amount of preparation can really prepare us for that.
Can I ask how old you are, Sam?
I'm 11.
You're 11. And this is something you've been feeling for a long time or just recently?
I've been feeling it my whole life.
Oh. Does this sound familiar, Diane?
Yes. I mean, we've heard the fact that we're not just talking about sex is a really important point. There are children who are suffering from the isolation, the bullying, the teasing, the more mean-spirited behavior. Something like the Bratz dolls, which are the best-selling dolls, they've surpassed Barbie now, and the kinds of models that they portray in their show, the idea that girls are kind of mean to each other and judge each other by how they look, and you need to have an eating disordered body. You can't be as skinny as the Bratz doll without having an eating disorder. that all of that is creating tremendous pain for children and youth, and that's, I think, the single, I mean, listening to Sam, you know, you can hear how deeply it, you know, what she's talking about is within her, and, you know, you're not alone, Sam. There are so many, there's so many children and young people who are experiencing it, and that kind of mean-spiritedness couldn't happen if kids were learning empathy, learning connection, and learning relationship. So I can't, you know, give you all the solutions, but one is to try to find the one or two people who, along with you, have been able to resist what all those messages are. And, you know, use each other to support yourselves as well as your family and other connections you can find.
Well, thank you for the call, Sam. We appreciate hearing from you and hearing from a kid's perspective.
Absolutely.
And I want to thank you both, Diane Levin and Jean Kilbourn. Our hour is up, but we could go on much longer. It's been a great hour, and we thank you for your ideas and your thoughtfulness.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Jean Kilbourn and Diane Levin. Jean Kilbourn is a lecturer, media critic, and author, and Diane Levin, a professor of education at Wheelock College in Boston. Together, they're the co-authors of the book So Sexy, So Soon. If you'd like a copy of this program, you can call the radio store at 1-800-747-7444. That's 1-800-747-7444 and ask for program 808E. I want to thank Carmen Jackson for doing on-air production this hour and for Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour. I'm Veronica Rickert with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.